You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the meeting grounds for spirituality and society, religion and culture.
We're going to serve out coffee and snacks, not right at the minute, but we're going to try and break down the barrier between like traditional worship time and the coffee hour. So we're going to let one sort of melt into another. And we thank Daphne and Jenny particularly for organizing the special Snackingtons today. But I'd like to introduce for a few moments what we're going to be getting you to think and talk about today. So I've called this little introduction our missionary position. What? Once upon a time, there was this locally famous restaurant in Baltimore called the White Rice Inn. It opened in the 1940s. Its limited menu consisted of excellent, reasonably priced, authentically prepared traditional Chinese dishes made by people who knew who they were and did what they were good at. Took a little while to catch on, but by the time I was old enough to take a girl out on a dinner date, it had grown into a Baltimore institution and was always booked out. Talk about a place with buzz and vibe. When I was visiting a few years back, I wanted to take my family there for a great old-school, authentic Chinese-American meal complete with fortune cookies. I drove to the familiar address, but I found this instead. Talk about a busted business model. I checked the phone book. The White Rice Inn no longer existed anymore. An old friend I caught up with told me why. It seems that sometime in the 1980s, a new generation of owners looked at the great, happy restaurant they inherited that had been built over 50 years and thought, you know, what we do is clearly great. Look at the vibe. Look at the buzz. Look at the numbers. Doing more would mean even better buzz, even bigger numbers. This was the 80s. Some is good, more is better, right? So they differentiated the menu into offering all Asian cuisines. Thai, Korean barbecue, Japanese sushi, Vietnamese rolls, Indonesian satay, etc., etc., etc. And what happened? Addition did not mean increase, your mathematics notwithstanding, but it meant a dilution of quality. The menu, once small and authentic and therefore excellent, became culinarily average. Nothing you'd go out of your way for, because no restaurant can serve well all types of food to all types of tastes. My friend said that the worst thing about its closing was not its absence, but by the time it closed with its all-Asia menu, no one had noticed, and no one really cared, because by then it had lost its unique identity and patronage. The unique service it used to offer to the Baltimore community was not even missed. Even a great vibe and a lot of traffic is no guarantee a place won't decline. Something more than buzz is needed. Much has been said lately about the growth and buzz and vibe and spirit of this church. And every month, a newsletter of a thickness and density rivaling a phone book is published. For sheer density of data, you can't go past it. And every week, I wave this bit of paper around, you know, the one, with notices reminding us that we're all a busy and vibrant and growing church, and no one is more pleased about that than I am. I really am. I'm not afraid of success, and I'm not afraid of feeling good, but I did do enough controlled substances in my youth to know that any buzz doesn't last and can't last. And then life just becomes the need to keep the buzz going, the good feeling going. And why would one keep sparking up a constant good feeling unless one felt at some base level not especially good, but somehow troubled? Our buzz is great. No buzz can last. They warn pastors that after about 5 years of ministry, the church begins to resemble you. Not so much that you've created it godlike in your image, like a self-portrait, but more like a parent creates a child. You've produced something that eerily resembles familiar parts of you, faults and strengths, and now follows you around with needs to be met that strangely resemble your needs, too. There's karma in every undertaking, I guess. Restauranting, parenting. I came into this, my first ministry, with all guns blazing, spreading lots of seed, saying yes to everything, trying anything to see what worked to generate spirit and growth. And surprise, lots of different things on the menu now. And there's more coming. It's not to say our multi-directional busyness is a problem, just the way it is. No organization can proliferate out in all directions at once. Despite our commitment to diversity, to some degree you have to be practical, know your limits, and play to your strengths. Are there some directions for us to go in that are better than other directions? The White Rice Inn had buzz and a growing clientele too, and blew it. So we need to ask ourselves, I think collectively, questions like these. What can or does this church uniquely offer the community? Not this community sitting around these tables here, but that community out there. If our doors closed today, what would our community miss? What positive effect on the community can this Unitarian Church have? What is or can be its unique service for Adelaide in the 21st century? Dumb questions? Maybe. But the research into thousands of churches, recently published by Tom Rayner, an ecclesiologist, suggests that there is one common overriding feature in declining churches, and that is an inward focus. Inward focus. That is the most common factor. What are some signs of an inward focus? Well, there are very few attempts to minister to those in the wider community. As long as we say all are welcome here, this is a public ministry. By definition. It's not in my contract, but I do it anyway. Decisions are made from personal preferences and tastes, like the nature of the font that we're going to get on our sign, the shape of the mailbox, meeting times, and so on, not from a question of what would be best for our community engagement. Another example of inward focus is that there's a sort of ideology around the old times of the church, when the church was in a golden age. There was never a golden age to be a Unitarian. The wider culture is to be escaped from. So this is, you know, the sanctuary idea that, you know, the culture out there is bad and threatening, and we come here to get away from it. Leaders in the church withdraw from effective leadership and presence. So these are signs that Rayner has of churches that have declined and the inward focus that has caused that decline. So these are all, none of these by themselves are, a poison dart, but each of them is a kind of straw in the wind that our attention is not where it needs to be. What about outward focus? What would that look like? Well, we remember the community matters in our prayer and reflection, and we do this. And in fact, we're going to find as we go through this list that we're not doing so bad on an outward focus. Our candles allow people to bring up matters of greater community engagement. We have outreach staff who report to the community. We do. We have outreach staff, we have Stream of Life staff, Jenny in the office, but they are stretched. There's much attention paid to websites and outwardly focused churches because that's your shop front window. We sort of do that. We've got a new website going. I wouldn't say our attention to it is obsessive, but we intentionally schedule regular events that serve a wider community need. Sort of. Some things we do. We're intentional about connecting to the community via social media. Yes, sort of. We have social media engagements with the community. But are any of these from a clear sense of mission, a clear sense of who we are and what we're for in the wider scheme of things? In the old days, it was enough to have a church that offered great music, quality preaching. It offered events, and the idea was to draw people in. And so what you ended up was a demographic of people that, you know, resembled each other in terms of class, educational status, and so on. And at some point, somebody asked, what about the people that aren't like us? What about them? And so a missional church turns that inward focus outward. to empower and enable and equip you to carry the messages out into the community, the Unitarian principles, or if you're a Christian, Christ's love for the world. Now, most organizational theory says that all thriving organizations have a strong sense of mission, a statement which gives direction and helps make decisions about what to offer and what not to offer. Again, this is a sort of basic assumption of most organizational theory, contemporary organizational theory, is a mission, sense of mission or a mission statement. Unitarian churches elsewhere have had, as you'd expect, many and varied missions depending on what they took to be their community's need. Here are some. Some have worked on the Martin Luther King model, the social justice advocacy to fight racism and discrimination in all its forms. Some actively do that. There are many churches that are run by my colleagues in the States that are very active, for example, in the Black Lives Matter movement. There's the educational model, a liberal religious education to liberate both traditionally churched and unchurched. That is, we offer courses and workshops and things to the community. So we're kind of a volunteer school. There's the community interfaith hub model, which we're kind of doing with the manse. The sanctuaries model. A sanctuaries church in Washington, D.C. has become an arts hub where people are encouraged to come in and write rap, music, poetry, dance, create theater pieces, all of which are an expression around their Unitarian ideas and values. So that's become, the sanctuaries has become a kind of art laboratory for various kinds of artistic expression. And of course, the Christian model, the traditional liberal Christian model, ministering to the poor, the sick, the imprisoned, the homeless, the marginalized. Other of our Unitarian churches do that too. What I'd like to know is what's ours. I know what I like it to be, but I just work here. It's your church. Will you help me out? Will you help me out today by talking and thinking about this? You've each been given some sheets with questions on them when you came in, and we're going to serve you coffee and cake during this time. Reflect individually first. You probably have been doing that already, and then discuss those questions as a table. I put the questions in order so that you arrive or are able to arrive at some sort of mission statement that reflects your view of the church's service to this community in Adelaide. And by the way, I'm not looking for right answers or consensus at the tables, just variety. I'm going to collect up all these sheets and we're just going to look at all of them and see what people say. The mission statement, if you can come up with it, needs to be clear and simple. Could our children understand it? Could they talk about it in Sunday club? So there's no need for consensus or a single answer. I am just looking for input. I need straw to make bricks, to use the Pharaoh model. So could we serve out the coffee and cakes now, and could people get started? I'll ring the bell in about 15, 20 minutes or so, and we'll continue. Well, we've had the better part of about 20 minutes, and we can, of course, continue this conversation into coffee hour and beyond. So don't stress if you haven't filled in every quadrant yet. If you want to take it away and work on it, that's fine. We're in no stampeding hurry to get all this data in, but I would like it. Well, I tell you what. Talk about a nice buzz in the room. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it if you haven't finished it. Don't worry about it if you haven't filled it in. I know the questions are hard, but I'd like us to start thinking in these terms. We have a reading to reset the worship. It's called Blessed Foolishness, and Joe is going to read it for us. Thanks, Joe.
Rob was trying to take the stool from under our feet, and I said, no, I need that. Gosh, Rob.
All right.
So this is a loving description of God, with respect, of course, whoever you consider God to be or not to be. It's by Frederick Buchner, I hope I pronounced that right, on the blessed foolishness of God. God is foolish to choose for his work in the world They're kinds of lame brains and misfits and nitpickers and holier than thous and stuffed shirts and odd ducks and egomaniacs and milquetoasts. I had to ask Rob what that was, who that was, and how to pronounce it, and I hope you all know. Milquetoasts, Rob, save me.
A milquetoast is a very sort of weak and ineffectual person. Milquetoast.
So there you go. We've all learned. And I still pronounced it wrong by the sound of it. And closet sensualists, as are vividly represented here by you and me. God is foolish to send us out to speak of hope to a world that slogs along heart deep in the conviction that from here on out things can only get worse. To speak of realities we cannot see when the realities we can see all too well are already more than we can handle. To speak of loving our enemies when we have a hard enough time of it just loving our friends. God is foolish to send us out on a journey for which there are no sure maps. Such is the foolishness of God.
Thanks, Joe. A question like, what's all this for? Might seem childlike and foolish, but it's probably more foolish not to ask that kind of question. Listen, I would have liked nothing better than to spend my writing time turning out another dapper little spoken word elegy on the ironies of living a religious life in a secular broken world. I would much prefer to have done that. Why, oh why have I focused on mission now? Well, there are three reasons. I'm trying to refocus my ministry for the next few years. Naturally, we want to witness our Unitarianism in the larger community because what you love, you share. And we could use the vibe that we have, it is useful, to build relevance. And let me tell you just a quick anecdote about that. Between my predecessor and the settled minister that came before her, we had a kind of conga line of interims who came for sort of 3 months at a time or so. And I got to know one of them reasonably well and to talk ministry training with them. And, you know, we talked about the call and so on. And one of the interims said, look, can I be frank with you? And I went, yes, please do. And he went, don't take the Adelaide church as being typical of Unitarian churches everywhere. I said, why? He said, well, this is why. They're small, smart, and smug. And that's how we've been known in the wider community. Small, I don't mind. Numbers aren't a big deal. I mean, you can have a vibrant small church. Smart, it's not bad to be smart. But smug, I'll be damned. But if by the end of my ministry we're still called that, especially when there's an antidote. Mission is the antidote. Because this is our choice of what to do with what we've been building. Are we finally, shall we just try to feel good, or shall we do good for others with the good we feel? Are we finally about self or others? Are we about escape from the world or engagement with the world? Are we about the love of life or the fear of it? It really is that simple. Either way, we are going to look foolish. Only one way do we continue to thrive and to work toward that better world our Unitarian faith envisions. Amen. Leave you today with words of Henry Nouwen. Did I offer peace today? Did I bring a smile to someone's face? Did I say words of healing? Did I let go of anger and resentment? Did I forgive? Did I love? These are the real questions. I must trust that the little bit of love that I sow now will bear many fruits, both in this world and any world to come. Amen. Have a great week.
Rob McPherson's addresses are his intellectual property. They may only be used by other preachers. If his permission is sought and expressed, acknowledgement is given that they are his work, and the addresses are used in their entirety. To seek his permission, email rob at unitarianessay@bigpond.com.
And that's our episode of Expanding Horizons for the week. The introduction is a piece named Elements by the artist CDK. The piece is licensed under Creative Commons. This is White Rabbit, out.